This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you on this Tuesday. Thank you so much for being here. Tom DiBenedetto, the executive producer. Producer underscore Tom on Twitter. Andrew Bogish, the trivia brute. Just an aggressive trivia player from yesterday. Just getting in there at Andrew Bogish on Twitter. You can hit me up as well, Sports Ryder, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. As always, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. One of the things about doing a radio show, and I guess one of the other things, it's an amazing job. I love doing it. But you are somewhat beholden to the timing of news dropping. There's nothing better than being 3 minutes from a show starting and having some pretty significant news, like a thunderbolt from above come down. And there's nothing, I don't know if frustrating is the proper way to express it, but certainly there's some bemusement when, like yesterday, we wrap the show, we feel good about the show, we hope you enjoyed listening to the show, and the news shortly thereafter comes down, in this case, a thunderbolt of sorts, that J.J. Watt had decided to become a member of the Arizona Cardinals. So I know you've heard that almost certainly over the last 22 or 23 hours, but we want to give you our take, our perspective. And for me, it's not the celebratory, the Cardinals landed him after a fierce competition from a third of the NFL. Or look at their contenders. To me, it reeks of desperation, and it's one of the flashing warning signs that Arizona, perhaps like the Raiders, perhaps, might be jumping the shark before they're ever actually a hit, as you really dive into that Happy Days analogy. So we'll do that at the end of the hour. Coming up 30 or 34 minutes. Kyrie Irving had something to say about James Harden. We're going to let him have his say and maybe dive into the particulars of that. Sam Amick's going to be on the program. National NBA insider for The Athletic, friend of mine. And for those of you on the West Coast or that have been here and know the reference I'm about to drop, there's also a very, I don't want to get too cheesy, it's a Tuesday, it's early in the day, early in the week, but almost a spiritual connection between Sam and I, because he introduced me to In-N-Out Burger. And that's a bond that never ends. So Sam Amick will be on the show. An hour from now, we'll do buy or sell. And as always, we invite your phone calls at 855-212-4CBS. One of the things that became clear to me, I was a pretty idealistic kid. I used to, when I lived in Dubuque, Iowa, to help put myself through college, right? My parents, wisely, starting when I turned 14 years old, maybe get a job. Now, at 14 and 15, at least back in the 90s, couldn't work real jobs, so I had to go and shuck corn and sell melons and do those things. But the moment I turned 16, I worked 40 hours a week during the summer and a lot of hours during the school year. And I worked at Walmart. I would bag the candy aisle, which was a really bad idea. That is, how did Ray Hudson put it? Like releasing Dracula into a blood bank? I have a bit of a sweet tooth. But I was a pretty idealistic kid. You'd catch me 16, 17, 18, singing in the aisle at Walmart on a Tuesday night while stocking Snickers. Went to college. Pretty optimistic dude. One of the lessons I learned is that being a good person, that's, by the way, that's not easy to do in life in general. I would like to think most of us strive for that. I'm not sure we all do. I try. But being a really decent person in a cutthroat business, like in professional sports, is hard to do. And it turns out in life, in the NBA, in the NFL, and what I do and whatever you do, that being decent, being kind, being worthy of success does not make it so. And I've been having this conversation to a certain degree with my children. We live in a neighborhood in L.A. that has a share, because it's L.A., right, of its wealth, of very obnoxiously wealthy people, which my kids are aware of. And some of them are awesome, and some of them subtract from the sum of all human joy. And my kids have become aware enough of this to ask, well, how can that person, you know, do so successfully if everybody hates him? Well, first of all, just because daddy hates him doesn't mean everybody hates him. And B, life isn't fair. And to a lesser degree, that was true with Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. You can say whatever you want about these guys as players, but unless you're a Bucs or Patriots fan, do not make the case to me Tom Brady is a more likable guy than Patrick Mahomes, like my neighbor John tried yesterday. He's a nice guy. I had to put my hand up and walk inside. You don't always succeed because you're likable. I mean, the Cubs for years were the lovable losers. I think, and I know we don't know people really, ask folks who are supporters of the governor of New York, but we know them as best we can. And I would venture to argue pretty strenuously that Deshaun Watson's a really good guy. There's a lot of evidence to suggest, and I mean just a good human being. There's no guarantee that things are going to work out for him in his career. There's no guarantee the Texans are going to release him from their grasp. Things may not work out for Deshaun Watson. And that came to mind yesterday when the news came down that the Atlanta Hawks, an underachieving Atlanta Hawks team, and put me on the list of people who bought what they were selling. I thought they were going to be a top, maybe six team, as in seis. Is that right, Spanish? I think I did. In the NBA. And they're struggling to make sure they hang on to one of those play-in spots. And the news that was expected, but not this early, that Lloyd Pierce, the head coach, had been fired, came down. Now, here's two things you need to know about Lloyd Pierce. And I mean both of them. He is an incredible, by all accounts, I could be wrong on both these counts, but I have a lot of confidence that he is both a great human being and a very bad head coach. And you can evolve in these things, by the way. Do you know who was a really bad head coach when he was the head coach in the National Football League of the New England Patriots? Pete Carroll. He was. Some people are so gifted that they are successful from jump street and that success continues. But many long-term success stories have to fail in order to succeed. I hope it goes that way for Lloyd Pierce. Nice guy. Nice guy. I don't believe nice guys finish last all the time. I just believe because you're a nice guy doesn't mean that you won't. And the Atlanta Hawks made the decision that in professional sports, you have to make. You have to make. And that is, you have to fire people that you care about. Maybe people that you love in the service of success. And that is easier said than done. I've only been a boss a few times in my life. Really when I had a TV show, really. It's sort of a weird dynamic. They don't work for you, but they do work for you. And I can tell you this. It is really easy as someone who's been pretty hardworking in his life and really lucky, as someone who in this, I think it's silly debate on Twitter, man, everybody feels all the feels all the time, don't they? Unpaid intern. Did you see this? Unpaid internships versus paid internships. You're the worst. You're the worst. Okay. I mean, look, I'm the old guy on my lawn. I'm just going to say it. I went into debt. I was miserable. I slept next to a bass boat. I did a lot of things, not even to be wildly successful, just to make sure I had a job when I came out of college. So I'm on the do what you got to do bandwagon. That's where I come down. But I don't begrudge no one if they can find a way to make their career work without unpaid internships. But a friend of mine once said, and she was right, her dad told her, you play by the rules of the arena you step into. You want to change the rules of the arena? Rise up and control the thing. You play by the rules of the arena that you step into. Life isn't fair, man. Success isn't guaranteed. And it doesn't happen for everyone for whom it should happen. And the fact is that the Atlanta Hawks did the thing that I struggled to do when I was a boss. That's easier to say you should do when you're trying to work your way up. And that is to fire someone, to uproot their life, to humiliate them publicly. I work for a television network and a radio station. And I want radio network, I should say. And I want both of those enterprises, those companies, to be successful. I also want the people that work at those places to all have jobs and to be secure and be happy. And here's the reality. Those two things do not operate 100% in tandem. They don't. I want to work here. I want to be talking to you in this microphone for a really long time. But if I don't do a good job at that, if enough of you think that that is a giant mistake, then my company has an obligation to move on from me. Easy to say, hard to execute. And I say that because every time, and I used to write obituaries as a paid intern, to be fair, at the Chicago Tribune a millennia ago, long time ago. And one of the things that you realized is that there's this temptation, no matter who passes away, to write about how he's the greatest person of all time. This guy was the best person of all time. And this need to lift up in an obituary doesn't just happen when someone passes away in real life. It happens when careers come to an end or people get fired. Lloyd Pierce was a bad coach, man. The guy didn't even win 35% of his games. That team was 25th in defensive efficiency. They have eight guys who score in double digits. They have in Trae Young the potential for a transcendently talented player. And not just that, but in the format, in the mold that you require in 2021 to be successful. They went out, Travis Schlenk is the GM, and they made some additions. They made some signings. They landed some guys. They had a quote-unquote great offseason. They raised the expectations for people like me and people like you. And you better believe that Travis Schlenk, the GM, and I know Schlenk a little. I respect Schlenk a lot. That guy's background, you probably don't know who he is. He was the number two in the front office of the Golden State Warriors before and obviously because of and during their rise under Bob Myers. He is the guy who scouted teams himself. He is credited with being the one who recognized, pushed for, and made sure the Warriors drafted a guy named Draymond Green. This is his chance. I like him. He's a nice guy. He's a good person, I think. No guarantee he's going to be in that job in a year. You go out and you make the moves that are made in the offseason, that's because the GM is selling the owner on the moment is now. We have a window. We can do this. And by the way, I don't know that I love this new play-in scenario in the NBA, but I'm wrong. I was wrong about Major League Baseball expanding. I was wrong about the NFL expanding. I don't want one bye in the NFL per side. It was awesome. It was an amazing postseason. Bill Ryder, writer than nobody when it comes to change sometimes. Creates pressure, though. Wait, there's extra playoff slots and you're still in the playoffs? You had me spend all this money and you couldn't get to the spot or succeed in the spot where you got to win at least a couple games to get to a best-of-seven playoff series? You're fired. You're fired. And recognize the other pressure that comes, I think, with that Atlanta Hawks job. The same thing that's going to happen, by the way, and every organization in the NFL, not named the Bears, because I don't know what young Mr. Pace has on the ownership group, but if you make a decision to pass on someone who becomes a star, normally that exerts a gravitational force against you and on you. There's a burden. There's a burden. You take Mitchell Trubisky when you could have had Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, there should be consequences, and there might be. You take Trae Young, even though Luka Doncic was yours as part of a draft day trade, you better be successful. Lloyd Pierce is a good person. I think that's right. And if you look at the comments, there's a fraternity of coaches in the NBA that I don't think extends in the same way to the NFL. Coach gets fired in the NFL, Black Monday, and it's ho-hum, we got playoffs to begin. For all the other coaches who still have jobs. outside of Bill Belichick, who is actually interestingly pretty gracious in talking sometimes about former guys who got fired. I really think Bill O'Brien did a great job. Next question. In the NBA, it's different. Guys talk. Everybody talks and laments. But normally it's, one of our brother coaches has gone down. A lot of comments about what a great person Lloyd Pierce is. And I can speak with some authority on this, having reported on the guy. Can't be kind in the service of excellence. Can't be. It's not about friendship. Not to quote LeBron, who's really quoting the rest of us, so it's really LeBron who stole this. But The Godfather really is. It really is. I was actually talking to my kids about The Godfather in the car ride home yesterday, talking to Lori about this sort of concept. And my daughter goes, yeah, remember when Sonny got killed? I'm like, oh, my God. How'd you know about that? Henry goes, yeah, I was really sad when Fredo. I'm like, you're not even supposed to have seen this movie. Hell yeah. Raising my kids right, wrong, but whatever. I was proud of him. It's not personal. It's strictly business. And if more teams would engage that way, things would be better. It's not personal. It's strictly business, Houston Texans. Your quarterback hates you. He hates you. It's time to move on. It's time to move on. It's not personal. It's strictly business, Las Vegas Raiders. The $100 million experiment of Mr. Gruden, Coach Gruden, John Gruden, is not working, even at a $30 million level. Derek Carr's not the guy. It's time to move on. It's not personal. It's strictly business. Mike Trout, we don't talk about this as much because baseball's not as relevant nationally. It's just not, and I love the sport. Mike Trout, not maybe, has been the most talented person, at least in American sports in this generation, who has been wasted. Clean house. Give Madden another year and then clean house again. It's not personal. It's strictly business. Lloyd Pierce is an interesting Atlanta story. It's an interesting NBA story. It's a great, I think Atlanta's a great job. By the way, that's the top 10 offense. You come in, you do what Thibs has done in New York. You just get these guys to play defense. That's a really good playoff team. Easier said than done. But the right coach can command it. But the real takeaway is, for me, is this. You have to be merciless in the pursuit of excellence. You have to get things right. You have to get your arrogance out of the way. You have to get your ego out of the way. I wish Lloyd Pierce were better at his job. I do. He wasn't. He failed. He didn't even win 35% of the games that he coached. And in sports, it's not personal, man. It's strictly business. You have got to make the difficult decisions that are best for your organization. You don't give Ben Roethlisberger a bunch of money because he's done for you. You don't let Aaron Rodgers take control of the organization unless you think it's going to work out. You don't let Russell Wilson decide to make play calls and control the offense if truly it leads to the problems we saw over a couple game stretch earlier this year. And the reverse is true, too. That's why it's hard to make these decisions. You don't let Pete Carroll's ego get so big he thinks he's the solution and not its shepherd. You don't let Bill Belichick buy so much into the allure of the hoodie that he can't glimpse properly that Tom Brady is the savior of his football career and life. You got to make difficult decisions in the service of what's right. Feel bad for Lloyd Pierce, but credit on the Hawks for moving on. The guy wasn't good at his job. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Talk a little NBA. Talk a little NFL. I'll wish a wish upon a star for Deshaun Watson to be a Bear, even though it's not going to happen. Bunch of stuff coming up next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. I have a friend. She is a well-known sports media personality who, when people insult her, and to be fair, the level at which they insult her is vastly different. Everyone knows I'm ugly. So when you say that, that's not a big deal. She's a very beautiful woman and people call her ugly because I guess that's what a-holes do. I don't know. She just tweets back at all. Not my thing. I tend to just be like, thank you for listening, and I'm going to ignore you because I couldn't care less about your opinion if you're that stupid to say something like that. But I am always sort of amused or confused by people who get on Twitter and go after prominent folks like Andrew Bogish or Tiger Woods or LeBron James or media members, whoever it might be. And, you know, you ever just click like, all right, who's this jerk? And you click on the person and it's they have zero followers. They're following zero people and they've never tweeted except for the who starts a Twitter account just to troll random people. I don't understand. Put your name on it. A lot of bad things have happened with social media, but the rise of cowardice, I don't put your name on it.
That's my number one suggestion for improving the social media experience. No more anonymous accounts. It would hurt comedy on social media for sure, and I understand that, but we've reached a toxicity level that I think it's time to just have real identities only.
I agree. The problem is, I think, so let's say Twitter does that. Let's just take an example. You're going to lose you're going to lose 500 accounts just from Kevin Durant alone having to shut down some of those burner accounts, right? Yeah, I mean, and if KD only gets one account because it has to be verified with his name, just think about, so then a bunch of people leave Twitter and they'll go to some other platform that won't do that. But I agree. I think it's a great, great idea. I just don't think it's going to take place. And this is one thing I'll say about Kyrie Irving out of some respect. I will offer respect. I don't like many of the things that he says and the way that he acts with teammates. And just because you are a person who's got the guts to say something doesn't mean I'm going to all of a sudden, you know, I tell you what, that's wrong, but I'm going to celebrate that idiocy because he said it. But I much more respect someone I disagree with who puts their name on it than some coward who hides behind anonymity. One of the things that's always irked me, and I have to be careful because I can't outsource this, but it's always irked me about what I do for a living, is the level of phoniness. And don't get me wrong, I believe in newspapers, I believe in the media, and the idea of fake news and the idea that reporters are lying is a lie. It's a lie. There are certainly reporters, especially in sports, who are inauthentic in what they write because they're beholden to or sycophantic to the people they cover. But the really frustrating thing, and this just, I mean, I covered politics a little bit. I covered Bill Clinton in Arkansas before I got into sports. It's true then. I'm sure it's true now. It's certainly true in sports, is the people that rail the most against the media in sports, and I would imagine in politics, are the ones who leak the most. To understand the power of the media, you know, is normally a requirement to undermine it and to use it. And so there are a lot of guys that I cover who, and LeBron used to be this guy. He used to write columns about it. That's why I can't remember the guy's name, but the super not talented guy who has a radio show on another network, who's a joke in the NBA, why that guy used to yell at me. I used to write columns about his, you know, ham-fisted way he would protect LeBron. Because LeBron would be like, the media doesn't know what it's like, but LeBron would leak constantly to people. The people who yell the loudest about the media being unfair are the ones who leak. I don't know, but I'm just telling you. Bruce Arians calling his retirement fake news when it was true in Arizona means Bruce Arians is certainly leaking stuff on a regular basis. Trust me. And that's one of the things I respect about Kyrie. I don't think Kyrie Irving is leaking stuff to the press because he already told you what he thinks of the media. We're a bunch of pawns. Disrespectful, not cool, not okay. But at least we know where he stands. And so I don't believe everything he says, but I believe a lot of what he says, and I respect that he'll put his name on it. And one of the big questions for the Nets, and it remains a big question, is the level to which they could be successful with those egos. You can cram egos into a clubhouse in Major League Baseball. It's going to work. It's a different dynamic. They're going to get on each other's nerves. It's a long season in baseball. It's a grind of a season. But it doesn't have impact on the field the way it does in other sports. It's not like if Corey Seager gets frustrated with his first baseman, he's just not going to throw the ball to him. You know, it's a straight grounder. I just decided not to throw the guy out because I'm really pissed off at the first baseman. It doesn't work that way. Center fielder and the catcher aren't getting along. It's gonna be okay. It's not going to disrupt ball movement. Same in the National Football League. Now, certainly, in theory, a quarterback, I suppose, could freeze out, maybe, and you've heard about this, maybe a receiver. Hasn't happened often, though. I mean, Donovan McNabb and T.O. had their weird little thing, and that's the only situation I can think of where stars really impacted because of their disagreements off the field, performance on the field. NBA is different. You have to get along. And so, I respect that Kyrie said this about James Harden, and I think probably Probably he means it.
I think we have to implement the phrase, get used to it. You know, when someone's that special, someone's that talented, someone's that gifted, and they're able to, you know, do all facets of the game at a very high level, they're able to play, you know, at a very high level, and he's been displaying that. And it makes it easier for me. I'm sure other guys can echo the sentiment. When James is being James, it makes all our job a lot easier.
I mean, James Harden's been amazing. Triple-doubles have been amazing. And I am very, of all the things that I feel certain about, I am most open to being wrong about the Brooklyn Nets. I'm not. They're going to fail. I don't think it's going to work. But I could be wrong, because the talent is massive. And it's one extreme or the other, and I recognize that. It is one extreme or it is the other, and that means whoever's wrong is going to look like they were wrong in the extreme. And I have to deal with idiots who say, those idiots should have known. When the Brooklyn Nets combust, I'm not going to call colleagues who thought the Nets were going to be champions idiots. They're not idiots. That's a very reasonable perspective. I just come down on the other side. This is a good sign. It's nice to see Kyrie praising James Harden. I just want to see Kyrie's reaction when in a important game five in the first round of the playoffs, Harden goes 1 of 4 from the three-point line and looks like he's having a panic attack in the last 3 minutes of a fourth quarter. That's where I want to make some judgments. Andrew Bogish, at Andrew Bogish on Twitter. Bogish, oh, by the way, Andrew, I have a question for you, but I want to try out a nickname. But can I give you a little feedback on the trivia from yesterday?
Please do, absolutely.
So Lori and the kids, we were coming back from dinner, wanted to listen to the trivia segment. So we listened. I thought it was very funny, but in re-listening.
Uh-oh.
You were definitely really sort of riding the coattails. You're drafting off of Tom's answer. So we're gonna have to implement a bogus rule, you know, that you can't do the same answer in trivia next week. Because you were just, there's a lot of like, I'll also go with that.
Well, but my confusion is, if Tom goes first and picks the right answer, and I know that's the right answer, then what do I do?
You lose that round.
Well, that makes no sense. We should like write down our answer on a whiteboard and then hold them up together at the same time so you can see.
Ask Lloyd Pierce. The world doesn't make sense. Ask the Cardinals. They just gave JJ Watt $23 million guaranteed. I'm not good at math, but I'm pretty sure on the guaranteed money, that's going to, over the 2 years, it's going to be $2.5 million per sack. I mean, that's basically the money. We'll figure it out. It's going to be great. I feel like there's some reticence on your part to lose to Tom. And I'm not going to say you sent me an email today with some choice words about why that might be. I'm not going to say you didn't. I'm just going to say it's on. And I'm very excited about it.
I just want a PS5. It doesn't matter who I'm going up against. I just want Stu's PS5.
Yeah, specific PS5. That PS5.
We need to alert the producer of JR Sports Brief show in the evenings here on CBS Sports Radio. We need to alert Stuart Kovacs. I would imagine that we have, like a precog, you know, like a pre-crime, that Minority Report. We have pre-confiscated his...
He doesn't even know it yet.
He doesn't. His PS5. Look, to be fair to Stu, if he had two psychic children that were in a bath of water that could project their thoughts on screen, he'd know that PS5 isn't even his.
Right. He wouldn't have this problem. Yeah.
It's just in his possession. All right. Before we get to the update, and then I'm gonna talk JJ Watt in about 5 or 10 minutes. I just want to try a nickname out on you, Bogish, and you can give me a truth or a bogish, right? Like, this is a true moniker that fits, or hey, writer. That's some hot garbage. You tell me. So you know I like nicknames, but I like to sort of make sure that they're accurate. Here's where I'm thinking. I'm thinking next year that I'm going to have to refer to the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals as Cliff, taking his organization. Oh, I screwed it up. Well, let's bogus that. Let's do it again. God, where's my precogs? Hey,
yeah, from the top in 3, yeah, 2, yeah. And 1. So my friend wanted to hear the trivia
a
question.
Joke in there. Oh my God! That I did it this morning. It was amazing. Tom, help me. I totally sank.
Falling off a cliff, Kingsbury?
Yeah, that's what it was. The Cardinals are falling off a cliff, Kingsbury. Try to erase the minute.
Out of sympathy, I'm going to give you a truth.
I don't want your sympathy. I don't want your sympathy, Bogus. I really
out of pity, I'll give you a truth. Right.
Let's do a Bill Ryder palate cleanser, also known as an update.
Speaking of J.J. Watt, now that he's a Cardinal, we can focus on other possible moves this football offseason. The 49ers reportedly talked to the Panthers recently about QB Teddy Bridgewater. Jimmy Garoppolo, don't forget, is still on San Francisco's roster. The Panthers, meanwhile, could use the 8th pick in the draft on a QB, making Bridgewater expendable. I guess this is a slump for the Utah Jazz right now, losers of 2 of 3 after last night's 129-124 loss in New Orleans. Zion Williamson went through Rudy Gobert for 26 points and 10 boards.
Rudy Gobert is a phenomenal defender and phenomenal shot blocker. So, you know, it's not easy making shots over him. Honestly, I looked to draw the foul initially, but, you know, somehow I finished those
Brandon
shots,
Ingram
right?
Also scored 26, 23, and 8 assists for Lonzo Ball. His brother LaMelo scored 30 with 8 helpers, but his Hornets lost in Portland 123-111. Postgame, LaMelo and Melo swapped jerseys.
I try to embrace the next generation of guys and the young players. You know, it was fun playing against them tonight. You know, I've been watching them. Since
Grandpa
he was in high
Carmelo
school.
Scored 17 of his 29 in the fourth to snap the Blazers' 4-game skid. The Cavs sent the Rockets to their 12th loss in a row, 101-90. That's Houston's longest skid since a 15-gamer back in 2001. The Nets had lost 17 in a row in San Antonio, but won there last night, 124-113 in OT. James Harden, 30 points, 14 rebounds, 15 assists. Denver won in Chicago, 118-112, with Nikola Jokic scoring 39. The Sixers took care of the Pacers, 130-114, and Dallas won in Orlando, 130-124. Luka Doncic, 33 points, 10 rebounds, and 9 assists. Tonight's Raptors-Pistons game tentatively pushed to tomorrow because of Toronto's COVID battle. College Hoops, number 16 Oklahoma, losing at number 17 OK State, 79-75. Cade Cunningham scored 13 points in the final 10 minutes. And number 21 Virginia down to Miami, 62-51. The NIT is downsizing from 32 to 16 teams for this year. It'll be all at-large picks, no automatic qualifiers. The entire bracket will be played in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And on ice last night, the Sharks dumped the Avalanche 6-2. St. Louis, a 5-4 win in Anaheim. And the Leafs shut out the Oilers for the second time in 3 days, this time 3-0. Bill, back to you.
Andrew Bogus, thank you. Bogus, I just found out it is producer underscore Tom's fiance's birthday, I believe, today.
I should know that, but I forgot. So happy birthday to Gigi.
Did you not send a present?
It's going to be delivered later today.
Okay, so it's on the way. Is it Gigi's birthday today?
It is, in fact, her birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Gigi.
Gigi, next year, I didn't do it this year, I'm going to pull a Larry David, and I'm going to just get a giant oil painting commissioned to undermine whatever gift Tom can give you until he forces me to destroy it. Have you seen? I'm
That sounds perfect. Let's do it.
Only 15 years late to the party. All right.
It's pretty great, isn't it, though?
It is pretty great. Also known as the exact opposite of my delivery of the Kingsbury nickname.
I mean, frankly, that was pretty curved, that entire situation, I got to say.
It really was. That's a buy. Yes, it's a buy. Just give yourself. Everyone can do it but Ryder. Everyone can do it but Ryder. At Andrew Bogush on Twitter. Bogush is going to be back next hour, and I'm being told he may have a song for Gigi for her birthday that he'll perform over the course of 3 or 4 minutes. That's pretty exciting. Want to talk about J.J. Watt. I know it happened yesterday. It happened just after we got off the air. I'm going to tell you why the J.J. Watt signing is actually an act of desperation for a Cardinals team heading in the wrong direction next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Going to talk some J.J. Watt. I'm going to tell you a story about my machinations to get you a big-time guest down here, going to extremes. But first, going to take a phone call. Let's go to Idaho. Brett, what up, dude? Thanks for listening. You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Bill. I just want to say, man, I loved your message this morning. Very empowering, very positive, just excellent message. And I love the analogy of play by the rules of the arena you're walking into. I love that. Really inspiring to what I'm going through. And just want to say, man, keep up the good work. You're really killing it.
Brett, thanks, dude. That's like the anti-Twitter. Appreciate you, man. I really do. Whatever you're dealing with, keep on keeping on. That's part of life. That's part of the deal. And we love and appreciate your listening to the show. And we have great listeners in Idaho. Really do. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for calling in at 855-212-4CBS. Tom, you, you're one of your, and I have the list here, 331 responsibilities here on the show, include booking guests when we do that. We don't do as many guests because it's a two-hour show.
Right.
Can I tell you the length to which I'm going to be helpful for you?
I would love to hear this.
So I live in a beach community that's pretty nice. And I live in what could be, if you really stretch the definition, to be really, really kind to where I live, could be called a shack. Shack. It's a very small shack. But I love the neighborhood. I love the area. We're not far from the beach. We're very lucky. And we are.
It's gorgeous.
It's neat. We're in a shack surrounded by mansions of very wealthy people. I mean, I'll just name drop. And they've all moved. But in the last year, I have lived within walking distance of Steve Nash, Zac Efron, Kendrick Lamar. I mean, it's Mike D'Antoni used to live up the street. I'm very, very, very poor on the street. And there's a house next to me that is magnificent. Friends of ours own it. It's for rent for an obscene amount of money that I won't even say. It is beautiful. I got a tour of it. And it's for rent, right? The people moved out. My friends asked me, hey, is there anybody you know who would want to, you know, spend on rent what more than most people make in a take home in a year? And I said, if I were you, I would aim for some athletes. Like, I don't really know anybody in that income level. Those people tend to either ignore me or hand me their car keys and tell me to, you know, not get a scratch on it. It's awkward. But good luck. And they said, well, we don't really know a lot about sports. Who would you suggest? And I go, and I was thinking about who would I want to live next to me? Apparently, LeVar Ball tried to rent this place, or one of the Balls, right? So, like, but then I guess he went somewhere else. So I said, well, Matt Stafford. I mean, I don't really know Matt Stafford at all, but Matt Stafford obviously is a former, like, Matt Radford? Well, his name's Matt Stafford, and a former quarterback in Detroit, be the Rams quarterback. I don't know if he's moved. I don't know if he has a place yet, but I would imagine he's probably looking. And my community where I live in the South Bay is relatively close, as you know, Tom, to where the Rams' new stadium is. And they said, well, you reach out to him. I said, well, I don't know Matt Stafford, but I can ask people I know. Turns out that a friend of mine in the sports world, his best friend was in Stafford's wedding.
Wow.
I'm going to forward the listing along so that Stafford and I can become best friends when he moves in, and then we can have him on the show.
Please, yeah. We could do a Monday morning, like, weekly spot during the season.
Right.
You know?
Stafford and Ryder, you know, just every Tuesday.
That's right.
Well, you better be busy on Tuesdays. Maybe Wednesdays. Midweek. Me and Stafford hanging out.
That sounds amazing. It's going to be interesting because, yeah, he's kind of anonymous in L.A. right now, isn't he? So that's going to change.
That's going to be so, I'm sure we'll hit it a lot. It's going to be really interesting to see what he does. I know the expectations are super high, and I think for good reason, but it's a really, I think, severe judgment, for better or worse, on Stafford and on McVay. What's going to happen in L.A.?
In a real competitive division.
Yeah, it really is. And speaking of which, J.J. Watt, as everyone knows, signed a two-year, $31 million deal, $23 million guaranteed. And at the surface, this is a big deal. Gets to reunite, to a degree, with DeAndre Hopkins. Part of a team that had flashes, especially early and mid, really early part of the season last year, flashes of being very competitive in a very competitive division, as Tom said. Only had 5 sacks last year. He did have, I think it's 2 forced fumbles and interception. He had 3. He forced 3 turnovers. But here's the reality, right? And this is my overall takeaway. Reporting out there that 10 or 11 teams were courting him. Reporting out there that the Colts offered him the same or more money. Don't buy it. Here's my takeaway. He took the most money he could get. That's why he's in Phoenix. He had connections so many places. Green Bay hometown. Brother lives in Pittsburgh. I can go on and on and on. All the connections of the contenders. It's a money grab. And I think it's a money grab for a guy who knows he's over the hill. Now, is he over the hill in the sense that his career's over? Is he over the hill in the sense that he's, you know, he'll be a nice part who's not even remotely worth $21 million guaranteed? I think it's somewhere in that range. He's not the guy that he used to be. And we all know this. In the last five seasons, and five seasons in the NFL, you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway, is not five seasons in Major League Baseball for a 24-year-old. It's not five seasons in the NBA for a 27-year-old. Five seasons in the NFL is a career. We've had Kirk Morrison on this show a lot. I like Kirk a lot. He's a friend of mine, Hall of Famer at San Diego State University, played for the Raiders. He had a really nice run with the Raiders. He was a good linebacker for the Raiders. It's a five-year, he had a five-year career where he played at a high level. 5 years is a long time for most players that play that kind of a position. Over the last 5 years, J.J. Watt has played 16 games exactly twice. One of those times last year, and he was fine. He wasn't underwhelming. I think that would be unfair, but he was certainly not overwhelming. To me, this is an act of desperation from a Cardinals team that certainly looks like they made a mistake on a lot of fronts. Kyler Murray is talented. He's talented. There's a lot of talented guys in the NFL. I'm not sure he is the thing, and this is a high bar, but when you're taking number one overall, that's the way it goes, man. I'm not sure he's the thing that Deshaun Watson certainly is when he goes somewhere, and that is a talented winner, a talented game changer, a talented force of nature who can bend an NFL football game week after week after week to his will. There aren't many guys at that level in the National Football League. Four come to mind. I think Aaron Rodgers is one. I think Patrick Mahomes is one. Clearly, Tom Brady is one. I think Deshaun Watson is one. I'm probably missing somebody. I suppose you could throw Josh Allen in the conversation, but I need more than a season to believe it. The part of the thing about the guys that I mentioned is the sample size, is that the league is not going to be able to adjust to them in a way that changes that. It may dampen it. It's a fight. It's a battle. Deshaun Watson's that good. I don't know that Kyler Murray is. Cliff Kingsbury, and I've been a Cliff Kingsbury doubter since the moment they hired him. I didn't think it made sense. And to be fair, his run as offensive coordinator at USC was pretty amazing for the 39 seconds it lasted. I mean, what a press release. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? So I'm a little biased. I didn't think it was going to work. And so maybe my need to be right, we all want to be right. We all cling to the idea that we're smarter than we actually are, right? I certainly do. Show's name righter than you. I mean, come on. What am I talking about here? But I think it's an act of desperation by a Cardinals team that knows that they have a long ways to go and they're not that close. You have that kind of money to spend, you spend it on J.J. Watt, you don't know what to do. You're making decisions based on your need to survive your job. And remember, that Cardinals organization, that same front office, spent a valuable draft pick on Josh Rosen. And then they moved on in the blink of an eye to Kyler Murray. Now, you can do that without a lot of consequences if Kyler Murray turns out to be remarkable. I like Phoenix. I like the market. I would live in that state. I would live in that city, certainly. I want them to be good. I don't see it. I don't see it at all. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number if you want to give us a call. 855-212-4CBS. And I suppose I was talking to some folks yesterday about this, making some calls. I suppose you can argue maybe that division is going to take a step back with one team, right? You can argue that maybe Stafford won't work out with McVay and that'll be much ado about nothing. Maybe. You can argue that maybe Russell Wilson is going to have some discomfort in that organization and or they're going to move on from him. Maybe. Although I'm not really buying that either. You can argue in a lot of ways that maybe the Niners jumped the shark already and had that run. But not all those things are going to happen. The Niners could also upgrade. They could find an upgraded quarterback. There's going to be movement at that position. Absolutely. Russell Wilson's weird games could make both Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson realize they need each other. Certainly feels like Russell Wilson is starting to wake up to the fact that he wants to be in Seattle and may have overstepped. That's my read on the current situation. Maybe things go really well. And maybe Stafford really is as talented as the stats suggest without any diminishment from a lack of postseason success, because maybe he's the anti-Kirk Cousins. Maybe it is the organization and not the player. And maybe the Rams are going to be off and running. Arizona is third or fourth in that pecking order. And I have the least amount of confidence in that head coach as any of those head coaches. J.J. Watt to me is an act of desperation. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Appreciate you listening. We're going to circle back to some NBA talk. Sam Amick, my buddy, super talented national NBA writer for The Athletic. We'll talk some Lloyd Pierce, some Nets, and some other topics from the association next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Writer with you. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. And when you need an expert to help you navigate the NBA, Sam Amick can. Talented dude, great guy, national NBA writer at The Athletic. You should follow him on Twitter like I do, Sam_Amick. And by the way, if you don't subscribe to The Athletic, and like me, you plan to, you should do it through Sam. You should put him down as the reason that you're reading The Athletic. He's the reason I read it. So many good things on there that I discovered, but Sam's the reason. And he graciously, at a busy time, makes some time for us right now. Mr. Amick, how are you, buddy? It's been a minute.
I know, Mr. Ryder. Good to hear your voice, man. Thanks for having me. You hanging in okay?
I'm doing good. It's, when you come on, when Howard Beck comes on, it really makes me, guys like that, that I respect and like, it makes me realize how weird it is. I haven't seen any of you in, I guess, a year, right? I know this isn't new that we're in a pandemic, but it reinforces what would normally be. I'd see you in an arena here or there, at least.
Yeah, we'd be in arenas. It is a bit weird. It's been on my mind. You know, we're coming up on March 11, of course, which for the basketball crowd was the beginning of the shutdown. And so that's pretty wild that it's been almost a year since then. You know, I did the bubble experience in between, so had a little bit of a kind of a respite and a different change of scenery. But crazy times, brother. One of these days, we'll get back to it.
Looking forward to it. So some news yesterday out of Atlanta. I don't think it was shocking, although maybe the timing for some was a little unexpected. Lloyd Pierce out as the head coach in Atlanta. What were just what was your initial reaction, Sam, to the news that Travis Schlenk, the GM, had made that decision when he made it?
Not surprised. We had been hearing that it was coming. I thought it was going to come at the All-Star break. So it was a few days prior. I mean, I kind of had it on my calendar to check in with different sources at the beginning of the week. And then so a little bit earlier than we thought, you know, it was a tricky situation because, to be honest, Lloyd, and we have a story actually coming out here in the next hour, kind of looking behind the scenes at what happened there. So I would recommend people read that. But like, Lloyd was, in terms of job security, not very safe going into the season, because truthfully, I think if not for some of the really unique circumstances around the league at the end of last year, you know, he may have been fired during the offseason. You had the pandemic, which kind of changed the calculus for everybody, where the Hawks, you know, unwelcomely have their season come to an end on March 11th. You know, they weren't invited to the bubble. And so I think they were 20-47 at that point. And, you know, then you had Lloyd, and this is an interesting layer too. He, to his credit, he had made such a mark when it comes to being kind of a vocal presence on the social justice front, and a guy who had a lot of respect around the league from his colleagues and players. And he became a leader during a time when the focus had kind of shifted away from the basketball and to much more meaningful stuff. And I think to the Hawks' credit, they kind of read the room and said, okay, we got to, you know, get over the fact for now that we're not actually happy with the development of the players and the relationships internally. I think the friction with Trae Young was a very real thing. It had been for a long time. But Trae wasn't alone. So I would argue that, you know, player support or lack thereof is what did him in.
Sam Amick here on the show. Sam, we haven't, at least I haven't talked about this in a long time, but you jog my memory, and I think it's interesting. We focused a lot, and rightfully so, on the successes of the bubble and what the NBA pulled off last summer in Orlando, given the circumstances, and the wear and tear on teams that advanced as far as teams like certainly Miami and the Lakers in terms of the short turnaround. But there's another extreme for organizations like Atlanta, where they had a young team where development was important. For them, you know, looking at Clint Capella was important, and none of that was able to happen when the shutdown happened. How much do you think an organization like Atlanta was or was not set back in their process and their plan because at a point where they want to be playing games and evaluating players, they couldn't do it at any level?
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly a frustration for them and for, you know, the other eight teams or other seven teams that weren't invited at the time, is that you were kind of told that you didn't matter, and then there was no plan B set up for those players to go do their thing. So, for sure, and, you know, it hurts developmentally. It hurts, again, in terms of, like, you know, changing the calculus of decisions like the coaching position. And ultimately, I would say, you know, the league did the best job that they could, and nobody can see something like a pandemic coming. But it did have a ripple effect, because I even remember, you know, a team like New Orleans comes to mind, where you heard at the time that they were actually ironically on the other side, where you got the sense that they didn't really want to be in the bubble. But then you look back on it and you go, well, you were better off for being there. You know, Zion had to work through some stuff, you know, and I think that's a whole lot better than having your players sit at home and you know, either doing nothing or putting themselves in harm's way and kind of training in environments that they shouldn't have been training in.
Sam, I know there aren't many head coaching jobs in the NBA. It's a very exclusive club. But by the standard of, if you have a choice, how good is that Hawks job, do you think, over the next one or two or three years?
It's okay. I would, to me, Trey's a tricky player to be tied to, because he's so talented. Obviously, you know, got the All-Star berth last year with good reason, and, you know, was right there this year and putting up big time numbers. But you got to get the right kind of team around him. And we're seeing right now in real time, you know, kind of where it feels like a 50-50 proposition, you know, kind of whether you can build a winner around him and get things going in the right direction. And, you know, I mean, you got Travis Schlenk there, you know, fourth-year GM, who was, I think, rightly celebrated in the offseason for doing a great job landing a bunch of top-tier names. But those guys have been hurt. It's not going well. You know, they're 11th in the East right now. And I think at the center of it all is the question from a coaching standpoint of, you know, how far can you go with Trey? And he's still trying to provide that answer every night out on the court, you know. And so I don't know what the verdict is yet. It's, you know, they have good young pieces. They're not mortgaged in terms of the asset conversation. But, you know, right now between Gallinari, you know, in that contract, and Bogdanovich, you know, they are somewhat leveraged with guys that they had planned on being part of the solution, and we'll see if it works here.
Sammy McHugh on the show. Sam, we've seen over the course of the NBA's history, modern history included, the last 10, 15 years, certainly teams that win a conference often, obviously, are contenders, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes whatever doubts there are in the regular season manifest themselves in the postseason. Do you believe, Sam Amick, that the Utah Jazz are legitimate title contenders on the level of wherever you would rank the top, however many top-tier teams you have, are the Jazz among them once we get to the postseason?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think they've reached the point. Now, I'd be lying if I didn't admit that I was surprised how they responded to the shortcomings of last season. So when they, you know, fell short against Denver in the bubble, when it's a pretty brutal way to end your year. You're up 3-1. It all falls apart. You know, and all in all, I felt like they played pretty well, but three, you know, just dropping a 3-1 lead is as bad as it gets. And then the backdrop of what they had been through personally, between Rudy Gobert having COVID first and the friction between he and Donovan Mitchell. So, you know, we didn't know what direction they were going to go. So I do think, kind of born out of that fire, if you will, now is a team that has really found its identity. Mike Conley, you know, has been so good this year, all the way down the line. You know, Royce O'Neal and they're deep. Jordan Clarkson has been fantastic, so I like them. I mean, they've grown, and I think it's one of those things where we see teams. It's like, you know, Jordan and his Bulls when they kept losing to Detroit. Is you got to grow from that before you can become the elite team. Is this the year that they win the whole thing? Like, if we're picking a team, I'm probably not picking them if I had to pick one right now. But I think they are capable of winning the whole thing.
If you could put five teams on the list, would you include the Jazz as one of those five teams to win a championship?
Yeah, I would. Top five for sure. I mean, for me, it's, you know, Lakers, Clippers certainly got to be there. I think Utah's there. I have my doubts about Milwaukee because I've seen them fall short Miami is a team that I think can be there at the end. You know, Brooklyn, without question, looks dominant, at least on one end of the floor. But Utah, if you want to just kind of, you know, not to go down the analytics road, but if you just want to look at history and have that backing behind you in terms of context, you know this, Bill, like top five offense, top five defense, that gets you in the conversation to win the whole thing, because that's pretty tough to come by, and that's what Utah has right now.
Sammy McHeron here on the show. Yeah, I'm annoying in how often I bring that point up, I'm sure, to the listener. Sam, this is going to shock you. You're going to be shocked. Are you prepared? Are you sitting down? I'm a little stubborn sometimes. I can be, yeah, I know, it's stunning, a little intractable. I started this big three in Brooklyn reality as a skeptic. I remain a skeptic, but there's certainly, and you reference this, at least offensively, a lot of reasons to think that I'm way off here. Do you want to help me find some religion? Do you want to convert me to the level of belief that the Nets are going to be just fine and really, really dangerous and likely possible championship contenders in the postseason?
Contenders for sure. Again, the luxury of covering this league for a while is you get to kind of lean back on what history tells us. So it's like, all right, Nets fans, it's nothing personal, but I will say that if they win the whole thing, I'll be, mildly, if not very surprised, because typically we have learned that a new collection of elite talent needs time, and they learn the hard way in the postseason that they have not worked out certain kinks. And right now, as good as Brooklyn has been, the kind of harsh reality is that because of a combination of injuries and COVID protocol absences, we have not really seen the James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving version all that often. And that means that they haven't worked out their stuff. Now, early on, it did seem like they had surprisingly, good synergy when it came to who's going to lead the offense. Okay, it's going to be James. Kyrie yielded pretty quickly. I mean, D-Wade and LeBron took, as you know better than anybody, it took them like a year to figure that out. And, Kyrie got out of the way right away. So that's a positive. But end of game situations, who's taking the last shot? Kevin Durant has had times when, he's taken two or three shots in the fourth quarter, and then the other guys are taking, seven, eight, nine, and that's not okay. He's Kevin freaking Durant. So that stuff's got to get worked out. And if that kind of nips you in the bud in a playoff series, then it's a wrap and you fall short of the ultimate goal. So I think they're going to be dangerous. I'm just dying to see how they work that stuff out. And then we got to keep remembering, I know Mike D'Antoni is right next to Steve Nash and they have experience on that bench, but Steve, as much as I love him, he's still a first year head coach. And I've talked to scouts who have already highlighted certain things where you can see Steve stubbing his toe just because of a lack of experience. And so he's also going to have to try to pull the right strings.
Sam Amick here on the show. Sam, can you make sense of, do you have a perspective on what is going on with a Boston Celtics team that, at least I'll speak for myself, Sam, I thought they were going to be a competitor this year. I was really high on Boston. They've obviously been fairly mediocre and fairly disappointing.
Yeah, it's a tricky landscape out there. It's funny. I think losing Gordon Hayward mattered as much as people had written him off. In the bubble when they got him back and he had this one game in their, I forget which series it was, but where, he kind of showed flashes of who he used to be. And this guy who checked a lot of boxes, playmaker, solid defender, another threat that took pressure off of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They're missing that. It's a third guy that I don't think was a championship piece. They weren't going to win the title last year, even if he was healthy. But that pressure now falls on those two guys. And even though they're both putting up all-star numbers and they're in the game, I think you're seeing that there's a limit to how far they can carry this group. So I don't know what they do. It's an interesting discussion around the league because, everybody's always kind of trying to guess to what Danny Ainge is thinking. He's notorious in terms of, exploring any and every trade, but then not pulling the trigger at the end. And right now, I think they have a tough calculus in terms of, do we react to the impatience of guys like Jalen and Jason who have gotten used to contending and being in the conference finals pretty routinely, or do we kind of, almost just take the patient road and take a pass on this year and hold on to our assets and try to figure something out in the offseason. I don't know what direction they're going to go. They have a massive trade exception from the Gordon Hayward sign and trade with Charlotte that everybody's wondering what they're going to do with. But, not a good year for them. You know, first time I can remember that you're hearing, you know, fan frustration with Brad Stevens, which is kind of a foreign concept. I think Brad's fine, but, you know, it's not the year they were hoping to have.
All right, Sam Amick from The Athletic. This is great, man. Last one for you. I won't keep you for 2 hours, A, because you're busy, and B, the show's not that long. But I would if I could because you're that good. Just for the sake of this thought experiment, say LeBron James 2 years from now, a year from now, just decided, you know what? I'm good. I'm done. I want to make Space Jam 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I retire. Who in the landscape, as best we can look at it, do you think is the next face of the NBA in an association that's got a lot of really, really exciting young talent?
I don't know the answer. I don't think it's revealed itself. I mean, I wrote an MVP column the other day, and I was really struck by the fact that I did 10 guys, and it was two tiers. And I'm looking at the second tier of five guys, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, that I legitimately thought any one of those five could win the MVP this year, which is to say that, in terms of, like, the elite talent, it's pretty wide open. You know, if you got me at certain points of last season, I would have said it was Luka. You know, I mean, Luka's not only an incredibly entertaining player to watch, but he's got global appeal. So maybe it would be him. But, you know, he took a little bit of a step backwards early on. He's back to doing good things. But I don't want to just hand him that kind of mantle. Zion's the other one, looked fantastic lately. I mean, if we're focusing on the young talent, those are the guys. In fact, at our place, we had a ranking of the prospects, the guys on rookie contracts all around the league. And I think the 1, 2, 3 on Sam Bassini's article was Luka number one, Jason Tatum 2, and I think Zion 3. So that gives you a decent kind of look at it. That's kind of, I think, the exciting part is there's some great talent that is just starting to emerge.
Sam Amick, you are a good man, and whenever the world allows it, I look forward to hanging out with you. At least I'll speak for myself, drinking one or two or three too many beers with you and seeing you at an arena. Not in that order.
We're getting
you.
Bill. We're getting old. It's got to be Vino. We got to shift to the red. Come on, man. We got to shift to the Vino. Yeah.
Let's swirl that Vino like I know what I'm doing. I'm in. Let's go. Thank you, buddy.
Of course, man. Thanks, Bill. Be good.
See you, bud. Sam Amick on the show. Sam_Amick on Twitter. Really good dude. Really talented dude. Read him at The Athletic. We'll keep it rolling. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. And I might add a name to that list as Zion and Luka next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Very appropriate song from executive producer Tom DiBenedetto. Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City. Because I was coming back yesterday, and my neighbor John, who's a great guy, professional career hazard is that people always want to talk sports. Bill! I want to talk sports, which is cool. I mean, I might suggest that they listen to the radio show. That's one thing. What did you talk about on the radio today? Well, you could have listened to it if we have a podcast. What station are you on again? No, John's a good guy. And we had a conversation. We were just shooting the breeze, and we're both here in L.A. John golfs a lot, big golfer. And we were talking about Tiger, and I said, I was up on that road that Tiger was on a week ago. And John goes, I'm on there all the time because he golfs up there. And we got into a very organic sports fan conversation about just the way in which Tiger is this cursed figure, and some of it his own making. I'm not saying that it's a curse that ended his marriage, right? It was obviously something much more universal that he decided to do. But just a rough run for the guy. And how rare that is and how unfortunate that is and how interesting in a really tragic way for someone of that magnitude of greatness. And we got into, I don't know how it happened, like sports talk, a conversation about who are the, not just the greatest athletes of their generation, but who is arguably the greatest athlete of this century and therefore maybe all time? You know, who would compete against Jordan, I would put Muhammad Ali on that list, right, of the all time, transcending their sport to compete. And I brought up Brady versus LeBron. And I go, you know, I don't really like Tom Brady, but I think there's a chance Brady's going to pass LeBron. I don't know if it'll happen, but the NFL is bigger than the NBA. And John is, goes, I hate LeBron. I hate him. It's not LeBron. I go, well, you can hate him, but he's still, you know, maybe the best athlete of all time. I hate him. Ain't no love in the heart of the city, right? Like, people want to like their athletes that they root for. They do. And it doesn't work that way. And for me, and we're all entitled to our view, I have the opposite view. I like LeBron. I'm not a big Brady fan. But I recognize in both cases they're extremely, extremely nuanced human. They're complicated human beings. They just are. But those are the two guys, along with Tiger. I mean, Tiger's on that level. It's just talking about Tiger now, and I realize this, is like talking about someone who retired. Talking about Tiger is a lot more like talking about Michael Jordan than it is, for me, LeBron James, because my hopes, my belief, even when I suspend reality a little bit and try to believe that Tiger's going to, you know, add one or two majors to that amazing resume, I don't believe it anymore. I want to believe it. And the last time I gave up the ghost on believing in Tiger Woods, he went out there and he won a Masters. I mean, I held on for years that Tiger was going to do it. For years. Brady might get two more. I mean, God help us. I don't know. Unless we're in a simulation, he gets 11 more. But you know, assuming this is all real, he really could. It's not easy. It's the field. I get it, right? You take the field. But they got a real chance next year. Both those guys have the chance, LeBron and Brady, to be the greatest of all time, and yet it's amazing how that level of greatness, people hating these guys, impacts how they view them. I think that's one of the ironies about what I do for a living. If I say something on the radio or I write something that some people disagree with, not everyone, you hate this guy, it's why you say it. No, the sort of irony here is that it's often sports fans who are impacted, understandably, by their feelings for athletes over what their head tells them. Having covered this for a living, having been around these guys, you grow immune to charm and to hatred. Now, I am me. I have a personality that is, you know, mine. So I really enjoy a guy like Chris Paul being a super phony and treating me a certain way and getting a radio show and bringing it up gratuitously again and again and again and again and again and again, because anything that he sells, you shouldn't buy because he's lying to you. But that doesn't impact the fact that I think he's a remarkably talented guy. Mark Grace is one of the nicest guys in my brief interactions that I've been around. He's not a Hall of Famer. I like to pretend that he is to make Yankees fans mad sometimes, but I get it. I grew up loving that guy. War 17, left-handed, you know, dashingly good-looking. One of those two or three, one of those things are false. Which of these do not belong? The slump buster. Amazing. Amazing. Bogus, do you know what the Mark Grace slump buster is?
I think so, but I don't want to say it out loud in case I'm wrong.
I think you shouldn't say it out loud in case you're right. That is not an appropriate topic for either Sports Talk Radio.
That's what I meant to say.
Got it. Or me, who doesn't want to sleep on his couch. My wife does not find that amusing, and I understand. But it was funny. It was funny back in the day. Who is the better all-timer, Andrew Bogish? Tom Brady or LeBron James? It's a tough one, right?
It's a tough one.
You have to give an answer, though. You have to put yourself out there. You can't say that what Tom said is not an acceptable answer because he hasn't said it yet.
I'm gonna pick LeBron.
You are. I like that.
Yeah.
Is that because you think he's already better than Jordan or? I'm interested in that. I think I would too, but I don't know if it's my bias because I like LeBron.
I don't know really how to answer the question. I don't know how to split hairs between two guys in different sports, to be honest. I think that LeBron's success and greatness can be more attributed to just LeBron than Brady's can. I don't know how do you take away an entire defense. I don't know how you take away Belichick. LeBron did things pseudo by himself that Brady just, you can't do in football. So that's part of the problem with the comparison is, you know, LeBron taking that Boobie Gibson Cavs team to a finals is remarkable. And the fact that they're always there at the end, as long as they're at full strength, is also remarkable. I think he had less help in becoming LeBron than Brady did. And it's not a lot, but it's enough than Brady did becoming Tom Brady.
I love the answer. I saw a stat at one of the Lakers games in the last few days that reminded me of where things are going. And I'm going to get it wrong, but I believe LeBron is currently all time third in points scored. I think it's third. And he's eighth in assists. And the reality is, and we'll see how long he plays, but if he plays for three more years at this level, he's going to be the all-time leading scorer. Three more years at this level and then a couple more years at any level. He's going to be the all-time leading scorer and top five in assists. I'm with you. He's a marvel. Tom, would you make a case for Brady?
Yes.
Or do you want to take? You would.
I'll do a kind of hedged argument, but I'll say that right now it's Brady, especially after what he just did. He is kind of an icon, an all-time sports icon on two levels, winning and longevity. As of right now, he kind of owns those two areas. And he's the second leading passer of all time behind Breeze. So in theory, if Breeze does retire, he will retire in the next few years as the number one all-time passer. I think when LeBron passes Kareem and LeBron wins his next finals, which I think both things are pretty clearly going to happen, then it changes the equation and he will probably end up passing Brady. But for right now and until LeBron achieves those two things, Brady's on top of the mountain.
We're getting your March Madness, so we can do this brackets thing. And how would each of you take your respective champions for bogus LeBron and for me and for Tom Brady and compare them to Tiger Woods? I think
so
I might go Tiger.
I've had this
personally.
Well, I think the problem again for me is like, whether it's Tiger or Federer, Nadal, Serena, I think it's hard for me to compare an individual sport to a team sport because they're just so different in their nature. It's just hard for me to like come up with what makes sense in my head to compare them because it's just not the same thing. It's apples to oranges, not good or bad for either one of them. They're just not to me an easily comparable thing.
No, not easy, but I would counter with this. I mean, these are made-up games that human beings came up with to keep scoring something. I mean, it's, you know.
Sure.
You can be kind of arbitrary. It's not like we're talking physics and math, right? There's not an Einstein who can give us an actual certain answer.
Right, but I guess my desire to not be arbitrary ends up being the hurdle for me here. It's like I want to have a relatively sound argument, and it's hard to make one from a team sport to an individual sport.
This is like talking to like NBA players and like privately, right? Like who's better, Michael? You can't compare Aris. Why not? You guys put a ball through a hoop and I write about it. It's like, why are we taking ourselves so seriously?
Right. I mean, I can compare Aris within basketball, but I don't know how I don't know the right way to compare LeBron to Serena Williams. I just don't.
All right, so who's the best individual athlete of all time between Tiger, Serena, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic?
So it's none of the men tennis players. I think it's Serena or Tiger in my lifetime.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think Serena's getting another one, which really bums me out. I think Osaka has just gone to another level, unfortunately.
Yeah, unless she gets a break of Osaka somehow not being there. But yeah. If she's there, she's going to have a tough time beating her.
Osaka pull a Djokovic and just hit a ball into somebody's throat too soon?
Anything. She could twist an ankle. Somebody could surprisingly beat her two rounds before. Anything's on the table in tennis.
It's true. And by the way, Djokovic wins that. Was that the U.S. Open? He wins that tournament too. If he doesn't hit a ball into a woman's throat. He should have been kicked out. Crazy. Tom, you like arbitrary. Get in there.
Yeah, team sports have always been more impressive to me. Maybe I have a little bit of a bias, but I hold LeBron and Brady above the individual sport people. As crazy as that is to say, because I cannot imagine going out on a golf course. I mean, even tennis. They're just such mental challenges to go at it alone and have the kind of success that Tiger or Serena has had. And it's funny, in the Brady-Serena conversation that's come up over the last month, because a lot of people are crowning Brady kind of the greatest athlete of all time, there's a loud group on social media fighting back against that, propping up Serena as their greatest athlete of all time. And the other thing is, I just think you have to, the finishing phase of your career, for you to actually be the GOAT, has to be kind of like the capstone, kind of the encapsulation of the journey, which both LeBron and Brady are accomplishing right now, and neither Tiger nor Serena are. It's harsh to say, But it's just, I mean, if we're going to split hairs, you asked me to make this kind of argument.
I love it.
There you go.
All right, last one. You'll have to use your sort of own arbitrary rules, but I think it's important. On this list of, like, athletes, and I think we've mentioned 10 or 15, so in the top 20 or 30, where does Julius Randle go?
Top five.
Okay. I was going to say top 15, just to give him more room to go. I don't want to put him too high now.
Right.
Because then, it's tough to move him even farther ahead. So I'd say, like, 13, 14 seems like a sweet spot for him with the room to grow into that top 10, top five.
I was going to go All right. I butchered it. Sell it. I am at 17.
As fast as possible.
I am at 17. Mr. Bogish, what else is happening?
Where were we? What time is it? It's 11:30. Let me pull up the right script for you, first of all. Their 8-game winning streak ended on Saturday. They hadn't won in San Antonio in 17 games. The Nets got back on track and ended that losing streak last night. 124-113 in OT in San Antonio. They had to play extra time because they let the Spurs score the final 10 points of regulation. James Harden had 30 points, 14 rebounds, and 15 assists without a turnover. That's his 7th triple-double in 22 games with the Nets.
I just try to come in and make an impact on the game every single possession the best that I can. And my teammates done an unbelievable job of helping me with that, coaches as well. And so I just try to bring my knowledge to the game and my skill set to the game and to this team, and hopefully that's good
Harden
enough.
Speaking post-game on Yes Network, Carmelo Anthony and Nikola Jokic each scored 17 fourth-quarter points in their games last night. The Blazers beat the Hornets 123-111 to snap a four-game skid. The Nuggets won in Chicago 118-112. The Pelicans outscored the Jazz 129-124. The Cavs sent the Rockets to their 12th loss in a row, 101-90, and the Mavs won in Orlando 130-124. Luka Doncic, 33 points, 10 rebounds, and 9 assists. Tonight's Raptors-Pistons game postponed. They hope to play tomorrow as Toronto deals with COVID. Red Sox shortstop Xander Bogaerts scheduled for 30 swings off a tee today in Florida. He's dealing with shoulder soreness. Manager Alex Cora said yesterday Bogaerts ramped up his throwing too quickly after arriving at spring training. An MRI apparently showed nothing of concern. College hoops last night. Number 17, OK State, toppled number 16, Oklahoma, 79-75. And number 21, Virginia, stopped a 3-game skid with a 62-51 win over Miami. And from the NHL, Toronto blanked Edmonton 3-0. Vegas outlasted Minnesota 5-4 in OT. And the Canucks were 4-0 winners in Winnipeg. Bill, back to you.
We got to go in a sec, Bogus, but do you want to just do like your 15-second sing and Gigi happy birthday? Or how'd you want to rock that?
Do you have my guitar ready?
Oh, here we go.
Wow.
Happy birthday, Gigi.
That was the Renaissance man, Andrew Bogus. And nothing arbitrary about that. He's a musical genius. Yes. Buy or sell next on Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on the program. Thank you for listening. Saturday, with teams on the bubble and tournament seeds still up for grabs, CBS rolls into March with a college basketball triple header starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, with Georgetown at Connecticut, followed by number 6 Alabama at Georgia, and a Pac-12 matchup between 19th-ranked USC and UCLA. March is here and the road to the Final Four continues on a Saturday with a college hoops triple header on CBS. Phone number here on the program, 855-212-4CBS. What an insanely interesting offseason in the National Football League it is going to be. The musical chairs that is currently underway. And we'll see to what degree there's movement. I don't think Russell Wilson's moving, but he could. I would call myself right at that 50-50 coin flip place as it relates to my guess on Deshaun Watson. He certainly wants to. And the fact that those names, among others, are out there, and the things that could be the consequences of movement. What, no one really cares about Nick Foles in Chicago, but Derek Carr in Vegas is really interesting. Jimmy Garoppolo in the Bay is really interesting. All of that is somewhat overshadowed how incredibly interesting Matt Stafford to the Rams and Jared Goff to the Lions is. Those are Those are significant moves. I don't think Jared Goff's going to be successful. I really hope he is. I don't know why I find myself rooting for the guy. I don't know Jared Goff. And he has been, I don't know, Tom, is it fair to say a weird range between underwhelming and really impressive that has averaged out just below mediocrity or right at mediocrity?
That's exactly it.
The range is interesting.
He's had multiple seasons as a top 10 quarterback, everybody forgets, but now he's had multiple seasons as an outside the top 20 quarterback.
It's an interesting, we make the judgments, we form the perspectives with the information that we have, but it's limited, especially when it comes to, as we just talked about in the legacy conversation, team sports and sports that have a huge impact from coaching staffs. If you're LeBron James and you want to ignore your coach, you can ignore your coach. Your ability to control your own destiny as a basketball player is pretty severe. Same in baseball. I mean, I suppose you can make the argument of the Astros, the cheating end with the hitters, and to be fair, the pitching coach and that staff in Houston that revitalized a lot of those guys' careers. Verlander is just one of many examples. But for the most part, when you step into that batter's box, when you walk onto that mound, you are what you are. It's different in the NFL. Even the ability to be liberated to be great is important. Look at Tom Brady. I mean, I could give you a million examples. And so we all presume, I also presume, that Sean McVay is brilliant, like we've said that he is, that he is the catalyst for not just the Rams organizational and football success, but whatever's gone well for Jared Goff, but we'll see. I have believed for a long time that part of the problem with Mitchell Trubisky, and I think he's probably been ruined in Chicago, might be that head coach Matt Nagy was such a control freak, so strangled Trubisky's possible self-confidence and growth because he was afraid of what Trubisky would be, that it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm assuming that's not true with the Rams, but McVay's a workaholic. Until recently, the joke was he didn't date or have any relationships outside of football, and we've seen that in the NBA. Thibodeau is a guy who was so obsessed with basketball that it often he burned everyone else out around him. It's going to be interesting. I think it's going to work with McVay and Stafford, but it's going to be interesting. If Goff goes to Detroit with some new regime and is just good, just is markedly better than he's been the last year and a half, 2 years with the Rams, that's going to be a really interesting judgment and I think perspective on the danger, potential danger, of would-be brilliant head coaches who have to be able to adjust their style to the people around them. If Bill Belichick can make that mistake after however many Super Bowls, you better believe Sean McVay can make it before one. I don't know if that's the case, but it's going to be fascinating. All right, let's do buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
So LaMelo Ball continued his phenomenal rookie season last night in Portland. The Hornets came up short in the game, but LaMelo poured in 30 on 10 of 18 shooting, including 5 of 7 from beyond the arc, to go with 8 assists and 6 rebounds. In the month of February, LaMelo averaged 20.1 points, 6.2 rebounds, 6.7 assists, and became just the third teenager to average 26-6 in a calendar month. He joined Luka Doncic and LeBron James as the only others who have done this. Buy or sell, LaMelo Ball will surpass Kemba Walker as the best Hornet since the team returned to their old name in 2014.
That's a great question. Was that out there, or did you just come up with that?
I just came up with that.
I love that question. Let me buy the question, first of all.
Buy.
And yes, I'll buy that he will.
Buy.
And here's why. This is not me being a captive of a moment. I talked about this a lot, Tom, here on the show in the lead up to the season. The fact that in those top three picks in the NBA draft, everyone, I mean everyone in the NBA that I talked to, was convinced there was a star. The problem is no one agreed on who that would be. Take all three names and swirl them around. There was a lot of folks who thought James Wiseman would be a star and a lot of folks who thought he'd be a bust. Same was true for LaMelo. Some of the names that I heard, some of the talent evaluators, GMs, presidents of basketball operations around the NBA, who I was told firsthand by that person that they believed in LaMelo, to me, were some of the better talent evaluators in the game. And so I was a skeptic, but I was really willing to believe if I saw. What we're seeing to me from LaMelo Ball isn't just great in the micro. It confirms the evaluation of really smart NBA people. I think he's going to be an absolute star.
Let's do another fun one. On this day in 1962, Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points in Hershey, Pennsylvania versus the Knicks, still the most points in a game in NBA history. Buy or sell, Bill, we will ever see another 100-point game in the NBA. A question, by the way, that came to me just because of the crazy increase in scoring we've seen over the last couple years.
I mean, you'd have to take 60 shots and play well. Didn't Kobe take 60 shots in his 60-point game at the end of his last game of his career? I mean, the only scenario where that would work is if Kyrie Irving bought a team, was the owner, was the coach, and then took every shot, literally every shot in the game. Like, I'm going to sell.
Sell.
Because part of me wants it, – it's interesting because it's not an easy sure thing it's not going to happen. Because, yes, there's better defenses. There's also a higher pace of play. I mean, there are just a lot more shots you get off.
Yeah, more possessions, yep.
Yeah. You know, shot per 36 minutes is a really interesting stat. But I just can't. I can't. And ball movement's so important now, right? Like, the idea of good shots, not just shots from your star, is so important. It's hard for me to see somebody getting that many shots in a game and not being immediately shut down in a box of one in the second half by whoever the other coach is.
All right, let's squeeze a little football. Both Super Bowl quarterbacks had surgical procedures following last month's game, with Brady getting left knee surgery that should keep him out until June, while Mahomes had toe surgery. Yesterday, Chiefs GM Brett Veach updated the Kansas City media on the status of Mr. Mahomes.
Pat had his toe surgery on 2/10. You know, talking to Rick late last week, it's a 3-month recovery, so we're hopeful. You know, somewhere around that mandatory mini camp, if we have, you know, we certainly think by training camp he'll be good to go, and we'll be smart with him.
Buy or sell, you would choose toe surgery over knee surgery if given the option?
Man, can you put in shoulder surgery? Because my shoulder hurts so much from playing way too much tennis. It's really making me angry the way. All right, so it's interesting you bring up toe surgery, because I don't think this is a surgery. I don't think it's a cosmetic surgery, but I have the ugliest big toes on earth. I mean, they are horrid.
I don't even want to ask why.
It didn't. They just are. They're gross. It's like big toe is huge. It's like the size of a baseball, and it's just disgusting. Both of them. And my feet are big, and like the toes are gross. And I, you know, for the first 36 years of life, it didn't matter. But now I live in a sandal community where I'm walking around. And it's like a Larry David. Curb your, like, people are like, oh, hi. And then look down on the strand, and they're like, see my toe, and just like, whoa, who goes out like that? It's a hobbit toe. Terrible. Yes, I'd rather have toe surgery. Whether
Bye.
Or not to fix the... I mean, I don't want anybody up on my knee. Really? I'm probably wrong on this, but it feels like if you screwed up a little bit of the toe, you could get through it. If you screw up a little bit of the knee, I think you're done.
Yeah,
I think it's over.
I'm with you. The Bucks host the Nuggets tonight in a game with an interesting streak on the line, as Giannis has led Milwaukee in points and rebounds for 14 straight games. According to Elias, that is tied for the third longest streak since the merger. Only Moses Malone and Karl Malone, interestingly enough, have longer streaks. Moses did 18 straight games. Karl did 17 straight games. Buy or sell, that streak of Giannis leading the Bucks in scoring and rebounds continues tonight.
Man, he's so good. This is why people are doubting. That Milwaukee segment was pretty popular in Milwaukee yesterday. We did. Put some name on. Yeah, I think he will. He's amazing.
Bye.
I just, even Sam Amick, who I love, did a little bit of Bucks doubt.
A little bit.
Not a lot.
All right, we'll end here. We have a juicy one on deck in the NBA tonight as the Lakers host the Suns. LA immediately turned their four-game losing streak around, beating the Blazers and Warriors to start a new streak going the other direction. The Suns, meanwhile, have won 5 of 6. They remain in fourth place in the West, and they hold a surprising 3-game lead over the current West 5-seed Portland. Buy or sell, the Lakers win and cover a 2-point spread at the Staples Center tonight.
I was going to ask what the spread is. So it's Lakers or -2?
That's right.
I like the Suns, man.
Sell.
I think the Suns are really good. I'm always betting on Phoenix if they're getting points. I just am. They're going to lose some of those, but I've done that this year, and I have come out ahead more often than I've come out behind. I mean, it's situational, depends on the line, but the Suns have covered some big numbers against mediocre teams, like -7, which is hard to do, and they've covered a lot of times, and they've been underdogs. Phoenix is not a bad bet because they're hungry and they're young, and Chris Paul's playing what I think is his closing window. That's the end of the show. I'm Bill Ryder. Thank you, Sam Amick, for being on the program. Thank you, Andrew Bogish. Thank you, Tom DiBenedetto, and thank you. We appreciate you. Hope to see you back here tomorrow on CBS Sports Radio.